Did you know that a Medal of Honor could get revoked? And that it happened to the only female recipient? Stay tuned, and I'll tell you all about it. Hello, curiosity seekers. Welcome to Dissecting Medical History. I'm Ange. I'm a travel nurse, medical history enthusiast, and your host. If you're looking for a storytelling formatted podcast with fun and fascinating topics, then you're in the right spot. Thank you so much for being here. And if you like what you've heard or like what you hear today, please hit subscribe. And if you have the time, please leave me a review. Your kind words will help me to improve upon what I've already been doing and help the longevity of my show. So go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And if you are interested, you can go to Instagram under Dissecting Medical History and the Facebook page under the same name. And I'll be doing a giveaway from time to time. I'm doing one now where you can put in your hat and I will be giving away some fun things. So go check that out for some details. And let's get the story started. Thanks. Today, I have you all to myself. I'm going to be sharing with you a biography of a woman who is a little eccentric. She's a little ahead of her time. She was a hero. She wasn't liked by all, but she did have support of others. She had some conviction and some moxie. She never gave up. This woman had an up and down life, and she never gave up. She had complete trust in herself. She knew her abilities. She wasn't afraid to fight and fight for not only herself, but she was an advocate for others. She was absolutely amazingly convicted to her beliefs. And I am going to be sharing her story with you today. Her name is Dr. Mary Walker. She happens to be the only female doctor. Actually, she's the only female that ever got a Medal of Honor award. She also had it revoked, which I will tell you about later. This lady, she had a very liberal father. He was named Alva Walker. And when he was younger, he traveled around the South a little bit. He got to see slavery for himself firsthand. And he ended up becoming an abolitionist himself. So apparently the ways of slavery were not to his liking, which I admire. He was a carpenter, married, and ended up having 5 daughters and a son. Mary was the second youngest. After Mary was born, they moved to a farm in New York. He built a schoolhouse. The belief back then was that children or women or girls weren't educated as far along as boys were. But he believed that his daughters and son, I think he had another son and he died, but the one he felt like they were equal. He felt like they should all have schooling the same. They should all share chores. He also believed that the clothing, the dress code for girls was inappropriate, especially if they were going to be doing chores. Felt like it was kind of restricting. So he forbade them from wearing any of that. It just was not efficient. Later he got measles and he had some residual effect from that. So he started reading medical books in order to treat himself from some of those ailments, which I believe is probably a big influence on Mary. She not only took medical knowledge to heart, she wanted to be a doctor. She also ended up believing that women and men had equal rights. She believed in dress reform and a lot of these things, abolitionism, she got from her father, from her upbringing. Definitely a forward thinker, and strong influence on his family. So Mary went all the way with her education. She, at 21, filled a lifetime dream of becoming a physician. She went to Syracuse Medical College. She wasn't the first woman to become a doctor. That is Dr. Blackwell, I believe. I'll be talking about her at some point in another episode. But Mary was the first in her class to graduate as a female doctor. She went to a school that was pretty eclectic. They practiced various schools of thought. She, which is kind of like her, she was a little bit forward thinking on certain things. I'll get to that later, but the school believed in not doing harm. They practiced bloodletting still, though. They still didn't know that germs caused disease. They dabbled in hydrotherapy, experimented with plants and herbs and such. Those were things that were going on at the time. Surprise, surprise, bloodletting is still around. And she graduated in 1855 after 2 years, which I find completely crazy. I went to school for 5 years and had two minors because it took a long time to get into nursing school. And 5 years, and I don't even have a doctorate. So for her to get a doctorate after 2 years is amazing. But then again, I mean, how much school do you need to learn how to bloodlet and amputate? Just kidding. Anyway, she was the only woman in the program. And by the way, she did have uphill battles, but she also wore pants. She was still not wearing restrictive clothing as she grew up with. So she probably was looked at a little bit strangely, but she did believe that corsets and dresses were filthy and dirty, and corsets didn't let you breathe. And she liked having that movement, which probably is true. You need oxygen to the brain in order to do some studying. And if her schooling was anywhere near as hard as mine, I'm sure that she needed all the brain cells she can get. So anyway, she graduated, and she was really unsuccessful at getting a practice. She moved to Ohio to be near her aunt, but people just didn't want to see a female doctor. There weren't very many of them at the time. When the Civil War broke out, which wasn't too many years past this, there was only 200 female doctors. So it's kind of a weird concept. To think about it now, you would think that some people like to go see nurse practitioners because they are female. They might understand things better if you're another female. But it's hard to trust if you're, you know, people didn't think that women were as smart as men. So she did have some troubles there. She constantly had uphill battles, but that was one of them. Then another reason could have been because of the pants. She did have a dress that wasn't quite of the time. So I put some pictures on Instagram so you could see some of the outfits that she'd worn over the years. And in the beginning, she would wear these pants that was kind of like under a skirt. And again, she didn't do the corset, but it actually is kind of a cute little outfit. But also, if you note that she looks really young, she has kind of this baby face. And although I didn't mention it anywhere, I feel like that could have been a thing that caused people pause to want to see her. I mean, not only is she a woman, but she looks like she could be their daughter. So sometimes that's difficult. I think even today, you find that patients don't want to see a doctor because they look really young. In fact, I had a patient a couple weeks ago that, although she wasn't making fun of him, this doctor who was going to be doing a biopsy, she said something about his age, being like, but you're but you're like, oh, 19, how are you going to be doing this procedure? And he assured her that he wasn't 19, that he could perform this procedure, although it was his first time. But you got to start somewhere, right? And I feel that there's some people, this lady in particular was okay with it. But some people do have a little bit of hesitation when there is someone that lacks experience or looks too young to be performing something. So I feel that could have had something to do with it as well. Then she decided she was going to go back to New York, and she ended up marrying her college boyfriend, Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller, he was a good sport apparently, because she wore pants to their wedding ceremony. He didn't mind that, I guess. She kept her maiden name. Didn't mind that either. And then she changed the vows to omit the word obey, which I believe is a great thing to do, because she felt like we're equal. So I feel like he would have been a good match. He was really okay with all of these things. And they started a joint practice in Rome, New York. However, her attentions would get taken away, because when she was, like I said, she was having a really hard time with the practice, even when they were doing it together. And she ended up doing some other things that had to do with reform. She kind of found her calling in lecturing. She had first started writing for this magazine called The Sibyl that believed in some of the same causes that she was passionate about, like dress reform, women's rights, temperance, anti-tobacco. And she also started to lecture. She was pretty good at it. Apparently, she was very outgoing. She was very passionate in her speech and manners. And so that kind of took some of her attention away. That could have been why the marriage started to fail. Maybe she wasn't at home as much, or he felt neglected. Either way, he cheated on her, and then she was done with that. She kicked him out, divorced him, c'est la vie. But, well, that was that. She never did marry again. She pretty much, and I don't know if she ended up having any other partners or whatnot, but she did stay alone. But he's not really mentioned again after that. So I don't know what became of Mr. Miller. But again, c'est la vie. Then, so Mary, kind of saw the writing on the wall with, the war. So she was doing all of this stuff with reform and, women's rights, and then saw the Civil War coming. The Civil War was started, obviously in 19, it was 1860 when the states started to, South Carolina was the first to get out of the Union, followed by other states in 1861, early 1861, which ended up starting a civil war. They had fired on the Union. So she immediately was wanting to be a part of this. She had a huge sense of duty to her country. She really, really wanted to be a part of this, of the war. She wanted to go and help these soldiers out. She wanted to be a part of it. She wanted to be commissioned as an army surgeon. So in 1861, she went to the front lines in Washington, D.C. A lot of the fighting was in Virginia, and she spent a lot of her time in Virginia throughout the Civil War. But she went right away, offered her services, gave them her credentials. She had a fiery spirit. She just was not trying to take no for an answer. But they kept telling her no. They did let her volunteer, though, which, I mean, of course they're not going to turn people away. So she wasn't going to be paid for it. But she did. She felt like she had to be there. So she worked anyway without pay. There was wounded and sick all over the city. So she became a civilian medical worker Dr. Green, J.N. Green, was a surgeon in charge of the patent office they turned into a hospital and was glad to have her. They didn't even care she wore pants. They were just impressed by her credentials. And she continued to volunteer without pay for that year. She kept trying, though. She kept writing and asking for a commission to be an Army surgeon. And over again, they kept telling her no. But she felt like she had to be there, so she stayed. She became an advocate for those soldiers, a major advocate. When she would find out that someone was going to have an amputation on a limb that she felt was unnecessary, she would coach that patient on refusing that amputation. She knew, not only did she coach them on how to say no, but also how to improve their circumstances without getting herself into too much trouble. And she claimed that she'd saved a lot of good limbs that way. But she was a good doctor. She knew when something could be saved and when it couldn't be. So anyway, there was that. Soldiers were very grateful for that. And then not only was she helping the soldiers, she would go out to the streets and she would help the people there. She was in Washington, D.C. and dealing with malaria. They were dealing with malaria, typhoid, cholera, dysentery, all due to their failing sewer system. It was very overwrought and causing a lot of issues. So she would go and help. But to make sure that she was identified as a proper surgeon, she made her own union uniform. So she was a proud surgeon. She also did not want to be mistaken for a nurse. And even though she fought for nurses' rights alongside them after the war to make sure that they had higher pensions for all the hard work that they had done during the Civil War, she also did not want to be mistaken for a nurse. So she did wear her own uniform very proudly. Had the same colors and everything. She also was too proud to accept a nurse's salary. I guess at some point they had offered her to pay her a nurse's salary. And then Dr. Green wanted to pay out of his own pocket, and she refused that as well. She said she wasn't going to take out of his family's mouth. So she just didn't take the pay. But eventually she did go back to New York after a year. And not only did she go back to give more lectures, which, like I said, she enjoyed, she also got a second medical degree in Hygieia. I don't know the name of the college, something therapeutic college. Can't remember the name of it. But she got a second medical degree. And I'm wondering if that was just to improve her chances. She was always trying to improve her chances of a commission. Again, I don't know how long that took, but she was back out on the front line, so it couldn't have taken very long, because most of the Civil War she was out working for those soldiers. And so, again, when she went back, she was denied commission. However, again, they were happy to have her as a volunteer. And when she went back, she went to Virginia. There was a bad typhoid fever epidemic, and she worked really, really hard to get supplies for those men and surrounding people that were sick. And it was just almost impossible to get supplies. She realized that the soldiers would probably be better served if they could get them to Washington, D.C. She'd been there before. She knew there were supplies. But she also knew she was running against the clock, because there was rumors that the train was going to be attacked. She got permission to get these men there, and she got the last six cars, and she worked really hard to make sure that they made it, that they only two of them died out of all the men on the six cars. A reporter had witnessed her working really hard, cutting up her own clothing to use for bandages. But then again, once she got them to Washington, D.C., she was back at it again. Conditions were horrible. There was no pain medications. Instruments were rinsed only with water in between surgeries. Most of, well, not most, but a lot of the surgeries ended up with gangrene anyway. And after another year, she was still denied commission. She worked really, really, really hard. There was a book that I had read, and I tried to find it. It was a fictional historical book. And as I was reading about Dr. Mary Edwards, Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, I was realizing that the book that I had read was based a lot on her life, because that train was in the book, and there was like some of the surgeries and the supplies and all that stuff all sounded familiar, but I cannot find the name of the book. So if I do find it, I will put it in the show notes, because it was a pretty good book. It was very interesting. Of course, I think at the end it had a romantic connection or something, but as historic fictions usually do. But anyway, if I find it, I will add that to the show list. But anyway, back to Mary. She again was becoming an advocate, but this time to women that were flocking to Washington, D.C. They were coming because they were trying to find their husbands that were wounded or sick, and they traveled from far away, sometimes with their children, and then they were refused lodging. And Mary was pissed when she found out. She found out accidentally from like a policeman that had mentioned it or something. So she enlisted the help of some suffragettes and the army to get some supplies, to get some lodging. And then she would help them locate their wounded or sick. It's kind of ridiculous. It's wartime. And there's these people looking for their family members, and then they're being denied lodging because it's not proper for women to be running around the streets without a chaperone. Okay, well, now they're running around the streets without anything. They don't have a place to stay. They're just out homeless in the middle of the street. Like, how is that decent? That pissed me off, too. But anyway, she was an advocate for them as well. Then she later went to Gettysburg for that aftermath. This is not a Civil War episode per se, but if you know anything about Gettysburg, that was bloody. It was awful. Lots and lots and lots of loss of life. And she spent a lot of time helping with Gettysburg. In 1864, she ended up at the headquarters of the 52nd Ohio Volunteers under a man named General Thomas. And General Thomas is actually pretty interesting. Side note, he was from Virginia and he stayed loyal to the Union because he felt that was the thing to do. But because of that, he lost his lands and his family never spoke to him again, even after the war, which is pretty sad. I feel like he was on the right side of history on that, but good riddance, I guess. Anyway, so she worked under General Thomas, who again appreciated her. He had a great hospital. They had chloroform. They had renovated some railroad cars to use as mobile devices to get people there. He hired the first woman doctor in the Union Army, Mary. But again, it wasn't a commission. It was just contracted. But at least she started getting paid. It was about $100 a month. And then later they did retroact some of the money for her. So the 52nd Ohio Headquarters Volunteers was a pretty good outfit for her. She, again, Mary could see people on the outside of the base camp because that's what she did. She was an advocate for people. There was homeless out there, women, vulnerable children who were being attacked by those that were, I don't know, from the Union, from the Confederates. I'm not sure if they were just people in general that were just attacking these women, taking advantage. But she would go and round on them and carry revolvers in her saddlebags when she was accompanied by soldiers. However, she did not carry the gun if she wasn't going to be accompanied, because she felt if she got captured that it would be better to not have those, which turned out to be the case when she was wandering down a road, said she went down the wrong road and then ended up becoming a prisoner of war. She later, they said she did it on purpose. She was a spy, but she became a prisoner of war for 4 months. Turns out she was a spy. This lady never ceases to amaze. She does not give up. And they were probably sorry that they picked her up, because when they got her in the prison, she would fight for the rights for those prisoners. The prison was awful. There was disease everywhere. There's bugs and rodents infested everywhere. The mattresses were thin straw. The rice had maggots in it. The bread was all moldy. Pneumonia was running rampant. I mean, she was trying to get the conditions improved there for her fellow prisoners. And the most they would do is let her treat her fellow prisoners. But she was there for 4 months, and she herself ended up with an eye infection that kept reoccurring. So she kept, she ended up losing her vision, or damaged her vision. I don't think she lost her eyesight altogether, but it definitely was damaged. Then, because her health started to decline, she started writing letters to the Union, and she did end up getting exchanged for a Confederate major, which she later tried to use as a strategy for, surprise, surprise, a commission. But again, she was denied. But she did get, she was very proud of that, I think, that she was traded for a major. I can see how that would be a feather in the cap. Then after she took some time off to recuperate a little bit from prison life, again, she went right back to it. She got a post at a female military prison that she shared with another doctor. He did not like that. I think his name was Dr. Brown. And she was very strict. So she expected cleanliness. She expected good behavior. She made the mothers take care of their own children. I mean, golly, how can you even? She replaced the male cooks with female cooks. She didn't allow relationships between the men and the female prisoners. No rebel songs, no hate speech against the union. I mean, and he just kept giving her resistance, like nothing. I don't understand it. Maybe she just rubbed him wrong. Maybe because she was a woman. Maybe she wore pants still. I mean, she did wear pants. Even in prison, she wore pants. But she just would not. She had her convictions, and he didn't like it. So he just was relentless, and she ended up asking for a transfer. She ended up going to an orphan asylum in Tennessee in 1865, which you may know is when the war officially ended. So she was there at the end of the war. And then right away, she wrote to President Johnson, because at this point, Lincoln had been assassinated, and asked to be appointed the medical inspector at the Bureau of Refugees and Freedmen, and to make her commission retroactive. like I said, she tried and tried, but she had many letters of support to all of these other doctors along the way that worked alongside her, supported her, wrote letters for her campaign as well. And the president actually wanted to help her. The new Surgeon General did not. And they debated, and they even got an advocate judge who was involved, and he was against it. So again, she was denied. But 9 days later, she was awarded the Medal of Honor, which is the highest award there is for any military branch for going above and beyond the call of duty. When she was asked later what the medal was given for, she said, "The special valor was for going into the enemy's grounds when the inhabitants were suffering for professional service, and no man surgeon was willing to respond for fear of being taken prisoner." So that's why she said she had gotten the award. Not to mention her going above and beyond, being on the front lines, being like at every turn trying to help everybody. She did pretty much, I would say, go above and beyond the call of duty. Anyway, so she was awarded that, and she wore that thing proudly from January 24th, 1866 until the day she died. Ah, but wait, I told you it was revoked. It was. But she still would not give it up. She wore it until she died. Anyway, I'll tell you about the revocation in a little bit here. Mary still struggled to start a medical practice. She tried in Washington after the war was over. And again, she went back to the feminist rights movement and lectured in England, even, where she was pretty popular, but she just could never gain that same popularity in the States. She would do a circuit, and it would get cut short because she just wasn't being received well, or just wasn't getting enough attention. I don't know what the case may be, but she just wasn't getting the same popularity as England. However, England, it was a little bit more ahead of their time. They abolished slavery before the United States did, and I believe they had the Women's Rights before we did. I mean, they were just a little bit ahead, more than we were, but at one point, she received a letter to help organize a women's rights society in Mississippi, and they were going to give her $600. So she went right away. She dropped everything, and it ended up being, turned out to be a joke. She went out there, and I'm sure she was disappointed. And I mean, that was just a cruel thing to do. But she ended up doing more speeches and whatnot. And she's very strongly convicted, so I'm sure she just used that as fuel to keep going. She made speeches, and then she continued to lobby Congress. She wrote articles. She even wrote two books, and she worked alongside Susan B. Anthony and Lacey Stone, along a group of the suffragettes who were really in the forefront of getting trying to get the right to vote. But Mary believed a little bit differently than they did. She strongly believed that the Constitution already granted women the right to vote, and the only thing stopping them from voting was the right wasn't acknowledged. They just had to keep wearing down the opponents. But obviously that wasn't working, and she ended up splitting with the suffragettes, although it was pretty mutual because of Mary's stance on dress reform and not wanting to give it up. They were finding it difficult to be taken seriously. And so they started to wear dresses again because they didn't want to distract from that message. And so they no longer wore the bloomers. But again, Mary did. She felt like she could fight everything at once with everything she had. And they just felt that wasn't the way to get their message out. And it probably was a pretty smart thing to do because they were throwing things at them, food, and they just weren't being taken seriously. So sometimes you have to just fight the battles that you can win, you know? So they kind of parted ways. But she was still determined to not give up those causes. And she also still wanted to work for the government. So she got an interview and got an assignment at the Treasury Department, but the papers were never signed properly or never were signed, and she never got paid. She showed up for 2 years at the Treasury office, and they never paid her. Like, if I didn't get a paycheck by the end of the week, I'm out. Like, okay, I don't care. I don't care how bad I like that company or the my boss or whatever. 2 years. And this lady wasn't like she was rolling in money. She was a doctor who could not get any patients. So she just really badly wanted to work for the, I don't know. But they also said that she was starting to dress even more masculine. Again, there's pictures on Instagram that I posted and the Facebook page where there's her more masculine dress. She was wearing suits and whatnot. So the Treasury Department said, just pay her. They thought she was being mistreated because they didn't like the way she dressed, but they still didn't end up paying her. In 1882, she became a clerk in a mailroom at the pensions office. Again, that didn't work out. I don't know why, what happened there. She wanted to take some time off or something and then came back and they fired her. I don't know, but that didn't work out. So in 1887, she hired a professional agency so she can get some lectures. But then she ended up doing sideshows and something called dime museums, which are kind of like sideshow type places, novelty places. And so she did that too. And people made fun of her. This woman who ended up with the Medal of Honor was doing sideshow lectures. I feel like if she has such a story to tell that she went through the Civil War as a woman on the front lines. There's probably some amazing stories that she could tell. But even when she was a spy, she wouldn't talk much about those times. I think because she held it close to her, to the chest, because she didn't want to let her country down. She didn't want to be that person who spoke against or gave up something that could hurt the country. So she didn't tell stories, but that could have been such a moneymaker. I would have totally read that book. That would have been, can you imagine? I'd be doing like a whole season of podcasts on the stories she could tell. Anyway, so in 1880, her father had died and left her the farm, but it was a big mortgage. It was about $1,000 that she had to pay on the mortgage. And again, like she's just the ends, you know, she had to try to make those meet. She was fighting with her brother over her mom's health. And I'm not sure, like she was a fighter. I think she just was all in she just did what she could, and she didn't feel like anything was menial either. So like those lectures at the sideshows that she was doing, she didn't take it as a step down. She just kept going. I wanted to tell a story about something that happened with her. When she was at some point after the Civil War, she went in to go shopping, and the patrons around the store were gathering around her like she was some spectacle. Because she was wearing pants. I mean, this was soon after the Civil War. And she ended up getting arrested because she wouldn't give them their name. She wouldn't let them escort her home. She was escorted to the precinct. And when they kept asking her name, she kept telling them no. And finally, she showed them her Medal of Honor that she wore very proudly on her lapel. And she was released, but she did press charges because she again felt like this was an opportunity to use as a platform. So she went to court and she told them about how the clothing was restrictive and dirty and filthy and et cetera and et cetera. And the attorney pretty much was like, well, it's against the law and it's distracting, which makes me think that he is a horrible attorney because his argument is a bunch of crap. But the judge was like, you know what? This lady, just let her wear what she wants. I mean, it's not a big deal. Just let her wear what she wants. So she did get to do that. She also felt like because she was there fighting those rights, that it could help set a precedent in case someone else ended up in the situation where they were arrested for wearing pants for dress reform. And so there was that. Mary was very outspoken. And when they revoked her Medal of Honor in 1917, this was soon before she died. She died in 1919, so 2 years before she died. She fought it. She tried to bury them in paperwork, but they didn't take it away. She wouldn't give it up, but they did take away the recognition. And like I said, she wore it till she died. The reason that they revoked the medal was because I guess there was a committee that was looking into all of these medals that were given and found that there was about 500 of them that they felt weren't legitimate. For instance, it was over 500. 500 of them were taken back because the 27th Maine Volunteer Infantry in 1863, during the Civil War, were about to be, their commissions were about to be expired. So to keep them from leaving the army, I guess they offered them a Medal of Honor, which that seems pretty ridiculous to be giving a Medal of Honor for that. But so I get that one. And then 29 of the soldiers got Medal of Honor because they accompanied President Lincoln's body to Illinois. Again, that's not really going above and beyond. That seems like an honor to be able to accompany the president to his resting place. And then another one was Buffalo Bill. His was revoked, which I didn't know he had one, because they revoked him for work he performed as a scout during the Indian Wars. So I'm not sure what that story is about. Doesn't matter. It's not today's story. But that's why they took away her Medal of Honor. She did get to see dress reform by World War I. Women were starting to come out to help the war effort. They were wearing pants. Mary herself became more masculine. Like I said, she was starting to wear suits. She was wearing top hats. I think she even had a masculine cane. She had short hair. Like, she was really becoming a little more masculinated. And she also got to see an increase in female physicians. Like I said before, there was about 200 during the Civil War. But by 1900, there was over 7,000 female physicians. And she died just shy of the 19th Amendment passing for the right for women. And so she didn't quite get to see that. And I know that she believed like it was already a right for women to vote, but I think she still would have seen that as a victory. At the there's a memorial at the Arlington National Cemetery that for women in military that has Mary's story. And in 1982, there was a first class stamp with Mary and her medal on her lapel that was released. And in 1977, Jimmy Carter reinstated Mary Walker's Medal of Honor. Long time coming. But a lot can be learned from this woman. I mean, she believed in herself. She believed in her convictions. She never gave up. She fought for others. She didn't care what others thought of her. I mean, you can't dislike a woman just because she wears pants. And that's the story of Dr. Mary Edwards Walker. I hope you enjoyed it. I really enjoyed learning more about her and her story, and feel that she could be someone to learn from and just a little extra history knowledge for you. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you in the next episode. I hope you enjoyed today's mental vacation from your current life. If you did and are curious for more, please subscribe. Before you go, if you have anything to add to today's show, or you have a topic that you think is worthy of dissection, please reach out on dissectingmedicalhistory.com or Instagram on dissectingmedicalhistory. Thank you, and stay curious.